option of putting misdemeanors in halfway houses, we would certainly support that over sex offenders. We would also suggest looking at people convicted of property crimes, crimes that aren't against people. Why are they considering sex offenders at all? If sex offenders are to be furloughed, we would most definitely urge a revision of the department's current sex offender scoring matrix. As Ms. Smith testified earlier, we concur with the crossover possibilities of sex offenders. As Ms. Robinson and others have testified earlier, we certainly agree that intrafamily sexual assault can be just as dangerous and damaging as offenses that are higher up on the matrix. And I personally find that appalling and very offensive that you would delineate out family offenses and consider them less important or serious. To the extent of possible, convicted sex offenders must be required to face the full consequences of their actions. We as a society have deemed jail time as a consequence, and CWC believes sex offenders should serve their complete time. Victims are forced to face the consequences of sex offenders' actions for the rest of their lives, and surely a convicted sex offender should be forced to face the consequences of their full jail time. Thank you.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you. Just a moment, please. Who do you want? I'm going to come back here to Juno for testimony now, and then we will move on to Fairbanks. Sherry Gall in Juno, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Gall, and I'm testifying in favor of this piece of legislation for the Alaska Women's Lobby, and I will certainly try to be brief to let the people on the teleconference line speak as well. I'd like to refocus on the policy itself, and I think we can all agree that sex offenders are not nice folks, and that, in fact, pedophiles, as you've heard during this testimony, are very likely to be pillars of our community, people who are very adept at conning both adults and children, and I think are probably pretty good candidates, can appear to be pretty good candidates for early release. But again, I like to just talk about this idea of early release, and certainly the Women's Lobby supports the idea of there being halfway houses to reintegrate people into the community instead of just releasing them directly from jail. But we don't think that that's really appropriate for sex offenders or for violent criminals of any kind. I think that we all probably feel that violent sex offenders and murderers belong in jail for at least the full time of their sentence, which is often not quite long enough, and in order to protect the public. And I think, in addition, we would like to say that although this is beyond the scope of the bill, there might be some consideration given to sex offenders serving their full time in prison, in hard beds, and then being placed into the community in halfway houses to serve out their good time, which they are not now serving at all. So thank you very much. I'll let the...
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll go now to Fairbanks for teleconference testimony. And again, if I could ask your cooperation, if we have new testimony, please feel free to add it. If you are simply agreeing with previous testimony, would you let us know that? In Fairbanks, Bill Allen, please.
Attitude and applying resources where necessary to protect our citizens. However, I also
sponsors of both legislation should rethink what they're trying to accomplish and call on professionals in the area of sex offenders to advise them appropriately and redraft the legislation accordingly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And moving on to Tanya Mertes, please. Thank you very much, and with our grateful thanks for you coming forward. Also in Fairbanks, Marjorie Howard.
I'm Marjorie Howard, and I'm the grandmother of Tanya Murdy, and I am in full favor of House Bill 340. I do not believe that these people should be allowed out into society again before they have served as much of the time as we possibly can give them, because my family
is having trouble.
We understand. Please take a moment.
I'm sorry.
That's no problem whatsoever. Perhaps if you'd like to take a moment to collect yourself, if your husband would like to give us his testimony.
I'm almost done. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you for your testimony. I know it's difficult for all of you, and but it's important that we understand what is going on in our community from the people who are the victims, and so we're grateful for your testimony. Robert Howard, please.
Yes, this is Bob Howard, and as you may perceive, I'm the grandfather of Tanya and Marge's husband. I'm going to say some things here, which I didn't think I'd ever say to anybody except my own family, perhaps. But I think it's important. I want you to know that I very much support the intent of House Bill 340. I think it's probably a smart move. Let me just preface what I want to tell you by just making a couple of comments. In the past 2 years, my family has experienced the devastation of sex offense, and you've heard about that. The other thing is this, that I personally experienced the psychological effect of hormone imbalance and what that can do to your view of the world. And I want you to understand that it can be very significant, and it can be overwhelming. And it can be something that you have no defenses against. That is preface to what I wanted to tell you. We've talked about furlough here, and there's a lot of testimony about the suggestion of furlough for sex offenders. I guess my biggest concern is this. Violation of furlough by a sex offender is simply an unacceptable risk. I just don't think that it is something that we can bet our society, on that issue. I think that the crime of sex offense is one of the most difficult to detect and probably one of the most difficult to prove. experience that your very best friend for your whole life can be the perpetrator of sex offense and you don't even know it. That is hard to deal with. Therefore, I think that House Bill 340 is a good solution to an extreme problem. It is not an extreme solution to a problem. It's a good solution to an extreme problem. Based on my own experience that I told you about, my own personal experience, I think that participation in a sex offender treatment program is probably a no-brainer. It's an easy-to-do thing while a person's in prison or wherever they are. They don't have much chance to do anything else. You're right, they're probably fairly slick people. And it's easy to do, and it's probably of no value. And I feel that ultimately, most acts of sex offense are probably driven by hormones, coupled with maybe a little bit of a twisted psychological outlook, but they're driven by hormones which, when active, can overwhelm the best of intentions. I sincerely doubt that treatment aside from significant modifications of hormone levels will prove to be of value for people who have this kind of problem. And I think that given the opportunity, the sex offender will repeat. I think the statistics of the first over 40 years will bear that out. Finally, I guess I would want to comment that I'm very, very concerned about the suggestion I've heard discussed that a person classified as a pedophile would somehow be representing a lower risk candidate for furlough because it'd be easier to isolate them from their potential victims. I should think that we would all realize of all the sex crimes, pedophilia is probably the easiest to hide, and let's not bet our children's future on that. Thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome. We thank you for your testimony. That brings us, you have a question, Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Howard, do you know if the offender in the case that's been talked about up there, was he a repeat offender, do you know?
10 times at least.
Ooh. Prior to the offense that's been discussed?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I think the question was, was there a prior conviction?
That wasn't the question, answer to that question is no.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, there were other victims, but this was not there wasn't a prior conviction, so I wouldn't consider this a second offense, which doesn't minimize the offense. I think the question was going to whether this was a repeat offender. All right, thank you very much. That brings us to the end of our public testimony on House Bill 340. And what are the wishes of the committee on House Bill 340? Do you need to study this further, or are we ready to move this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I have...
Do we got somebody else trying to come?
There's somebody trying to...
Yes, go ahead. What...
This is Bethel, and we have one more person here who wishes to
testify. All right, very briefly, please. I will reopen public testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Holla Tannell, and I have lived in Bethel for about 14 years. And I've prepared a short statement, please, for your attention. For the past 15 years, we Alaskans have been asking ourselves and each other to comprehend the grim truth of sexual assault. We have all had to cast aside many of our fundamental assumptions of safety to be able to acknowledge that these crimes exist. We as a society have sent increasingly loud messages to sexual assault victims that we believe they deserve advocacy and support services, that we believe they are victims of a serious crime, and that there be consistent punitive measures placed upon the offenders of these crimes. Our statutes reflect these beliefs. More and more adult and child sexual assault victims trust these messages, are overcoming great personal and societal inhibition, and are reporting the crime. We continue to encourage them to do so. How can we afford any consideration of early release for sexual assault offenders? This could greatly compromise victim safety. This could be brought broadly interpreted as a fundamental shift of our state's position of the gravity of these crimes, this message will ring loudly and clearly to offenders. Many will be delighted to interpret early release as a message of no big deal. I really strongly urge support for HB 340, which would enhance, rather than discredit, Alaska's maturing position regarding crimes of this type. Thank you.
And thank you very much for your testimony. Again, I ask the committee whether you're prepared to vote on this issue.
Mr. Chairman, a brief statement. As a recipient of rape victims in the emergency room and having had several friends raped, I would like to move this bill out of committee with individual recommendations.
Ben, move that this House Bill 340 with accompanying fiscal note, which I assume the yeah, they were indicated that they were there, but I didn't, not that they wanted to testify.
They are currently on listen only mode, and if you would like to have them speak,
not at this time. Thank you. You have before you a motion to move this bill out of our committee with accompanying fiscal note, with our desires that you address the fiscal note in further committee meetings.
Okay, or you could hear from Diane Schenker briefly here too.
Well, we have things to do and places to go, and this has another committee of referral. So could I ask you that you address the fiscal problem there?
It's your committee.
we have three more bills to address. Representative Davis, you had.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm not on either of the committees that are. I just have one quick question of Diane
Schenker.
And it relates to the fiscal note. Should this bill pass and sex offenders are not available for furlough, are there enough other offenders to fill the docket?
To fill the soft beds.
The Chair, thank you, Representative. I'm glad you asked that question. I would like to just take this opportunity to stress that the Department would like to make it absolutely abundantly clear that no, there is not a pool of nonviolent offenders to substitute for violent offenders. There are misdemeanants, and I'm not saying that they're all violent, but it's very deceptive to look at the charge of incarceration and assume that someone does not have prior violent offenses as well, and that our department would really like to make clear that the way the justice system works, it's very rare that a nonviolent offender with no violence in his or her past finds his or her way into the prison system unless the legislature has passed mandatory incarceration, such as with perhaps the DWI, driving without license. So we do have misdemeanants right now that could be put into some of the beds that a furloughed sex offender would otherwise have gone into. However, I would just like to take a quick opportunity to say that we are 265 prisoners over our maximum capacity. That's more prisoners than any but two of our entire prisons hold for their entire population. And that while today, if we swapped the misdemeanants for the furloughed sex offenders, it is true that there would be no impact. In the future, assuming that we'll have to do something to address crisis overcrowding or face serious safety risks in all of our institutions in addition to $1,000 a day fines, in the future it will be a matter of do we buy more community beds, which are half the cost of hard beds, even after we've made that swap. And the department's very willing to revisit its policy on furloughing sex offenders even without the passage of the legislation, but would like to stress strongly that it is not the case that we have a nonviolent, no-threat population that doesn't cost any money to substitute for this.
Thank you. You have heard the motion. Are there any objections? Hearing none, this House Bill 340 is passed on to the next committee of referral with accompanying fiscal note. That brings us to House Bill 409. We have heard this bill previously. Representative Tui, I'd be happy to turn the gavel over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
As we left off, I believe, in the last meeting, we had a couple of questions unanswered. I believe several of them were Representative Davies. Did you? You had some questions.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman.
The sponsor of the bill is here and prepared.
I indicated a number of questions. I have, to my satisfaction, answered and feel comfortable with the bill and with all my concerns, and at this time no longer have concerns.
Representative Bryce, did you have a
couple quick questions? It was my understanding that at the end of the Monday meeting that Representative Betty Davis, who's out ill, had some concerns raised about possibly what would happen if we reduce the ratables back and some various other things. And my understanding was that those concerns were going to be addressed before we moved the bill. I was wondering if there had been any answers to those concerns.
To my knowledge, they have not. And this, if I might ask the sponsor, this bill is going
finance.
I really hate to hold the bill up because we don't know how much longer Representative Davis is going to be
well,
in town.
Then, and on the other hand, I had submitted a list of 15, 20 questions
okay.
at the first subcommittee hearing and have yet to get a reply.
Were those in writing?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you have an answer to those?
From the both to the sponsor and to
right.
the department, I've yet to receive any consideration.
Representative Patty, would you like to come forward?
Sure.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Representative Davies.
Yes, I don't, as chairman of the subcommittee, I don't recall seeing a specific list of,
I don't
of questions. I certainly don't deny that you didn't. And also, in response to the ratable reductions, I also had questions about that, indicated concerns about that, and my concern was what are the options for paying for the
yeah.
program, and my review says there are, this is I didn't find any other way, and this way is acceptable to me, so that addressed my concern is in that regard.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I got a copy, and I guess I don't know how you want to respond, but some of the questions were, what does it cost to implement the federal waivers? What does it cost to administer a demonstration project over the life of the project? Cost ratios, cost-benefit study. There isn't a cost-benefit study, but the fiscal note actually answers about half of the questions that are on here, and I guess if there's specific things we've gone, you know, Jan could answer
yes.
some of the
yes, actually,
ones.
The questions were written out prior
good.
To, and there are about six or seven or about eight, actually, that were left, serious policy questions that were left unanswered.
Excuse me, Representative Bryce, had you checked with a sponsor before that?
I'd been in contact with
I have a copy
with,
of his.
Had you been able to answer any of his questions?
Did we give him? We talked to the office, but okay.
Excuse me. Is there anybody from the department here? Thank you.
They're everywhere.
If you want to finish, Representative Handy, and then maybe Ms. Hanson can come up.
One thing I would like to offer is Representative Bryce had brought up a question of. We talked about the Colorado law, and we've drafted an amendment,
yeah.
actually, to, I think, take care of the concerns, to work with our legal people. Basically, we've already said if the federal government does not approve some of the waivers, they have the ability to determine whether they should implement the project.
Yeah.
We hadn't taken into effect or into account a situation where after the waivers had all been approved or whatever, if federal law or regulations change, what would happen. So basically, this says that the department shall apply for and implement the waivers that relate to the parts of the project that are not substantially affected by the change in federal statutes or regulations. If there are changes in federal regulations and the project does not become fiscally
responsible. In other words, then the department has the ability to discontinue the operation of the project if that's the case.
Are the ratables then brought back to the original?
No, the ratables, that's a different
fiscal. Would remain fiscal in place?
Level. Yes.
Even if we're not doing the demonstration?
The way it is right now. This just takes care of the... Right.
Maybe we could... I would, Madam Chair, I'd like to make amendment to the amendment to reflect that if the department pulls back on the demonstration project, that the ratables will be
repealed,
brought back, re-implemented at the original level, or at the level in which they were.
Thank you. The wish of the committee is that...
I would object. I still think even with that ratable reduction, Alaska has the highest welfare rate in the nation.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Nicolai.
Betty asked specifically for the department to drop the numbers, possibly at a 7% ratable, to make the program more cost neutral and less of an impact on the AFDC recipients. That's what she specifically asked for.
We have a motion before us.
Well, let us vote on this motion first. Laura Lee, will you call the roll? We're voting on the motion that the reduction be dropped back. If the waiver is not put in place, the reduction be dropped back to the 1990.
It's an amendment to the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment.
Representative Cynthia Tui.
No.
Representative Con Bundy.
No.
Representative Gary Davis.
No.
Representative Al Beasley.
No.
Representative Peacott is not here. Representative Paula Carley-Oldberg.
No.
Representative Betty Davis is excused. Representative Irene Nicolai.
Yes.
Representative Tom Bryce.
Yes.
Thank you. That motion fails. May I ask the wish of the committee, have we adopted this amendment?
No, we have not.
No.
Do I hear a motion on adopting this amendment?
So moved.
Any objections? Hearing none, this amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair?
Representative Nicolai has the floor. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just stated what Betty wanted, and do I have an answer or apply to it?
I don't have, I mean, I'm not sure I can, I thought it was directed at the department, but I'm not able to figure out a rateable reduction. They have the figures, so.
May I just clarify this? Was this asked during the last teleconference meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Asking for the 0.7 numbers on the APA.
Yes, Representative.
I mean, it's not too hard to figure out. What is the current percentage?
Madam Chair, Jan Hansen, the current percentage that you have on the green sheet, the fiscal analysis, was 1.7%. So, though the figures have not been recalculated, 1.7, a 0.9 would be about half of any of the figures there. If someone has a calculator, we probably could know. Whatever percentage 0.7 is of 1.7, it's probably about 40 to 45%. The amount of the reduction would be 40 to 45% of the figures that are shown on the sheet if it was a 0.7 rather than a 1.7. Those are ballpark figures, but they would give the committee the broad area or pretty close to what that figure would be.
Thank you.
I just think that if she asked for that information, Madam Chair, if Betty asked for that information, I would think that you would bring that information here written up instead of giving us a ballpark figure, don't you think?
Through the chair, thank you. I think that we will, I would move that if Representative Davis would like that information, she can get it through finance. Thank you. Are there any other comments from the committee? Representative Bryce?
Yes, Madam Chair. Almost called you Madam Speaker.
Call me anything you like. It's on record.
Getting backwards. Considering that there's close roughly 18,600 people on or that are due back child support, and that that are also on AFDC in the state, I would kindly submit that we look at possibly including some amendments to include some of the child support enforcement legislation that we've been talking about, namely for those employers who intentionally hide the fact that their employee is in arrears to child support.
Representative Bryce, you're off the subject on this. There is a bill before us.
Or yes, and I've got an amendment that I would like to propose.
I would like to know the wish of the committee if we want to take another amendment or if we want to continue and pass this bill on.
I'd move that we move 409 out of
out of order, point of order here.
Well,
come on. No.
We have, excuse me.
We were not told that this bill was going to come up until this morning. There was no discussion as to whether it would. My understanding is me and Irene left the room after adjournment Monday morning. Then there was discussion. There was no attempt to contact our offices so where we could be in contact with the sponsor of the legislation to address certain questions that we have not been allowed access to through the subcommittee or through the past hearing.
The subcommittee was open to the public.
Not according to your very words, Madam Chair. You said it did not concern the matters of Fairbanks and that's why I was not chosen to sit on it.
Right, and Representative Davies was, as a voting member, not
and
as a member of the committee.
She's been sick.
That's right, not as a member,
so,
but excuse me. You were here at the committee meeting, and I believe you were too.
Okay. Not when it was announced on Wednesday.
That's fine.
We bring it back up Wednesday.
That's fine. Well, we'll sit here and argue all night. What is the wish of the committee?
I'd like to make a...
I move that 409 be...
Before you make any moves here or anything, I'd like to say something.
Yes, go right ahead.
I think that that this bill here is a little early, Representative Hanley. I think that that you're going to be tying up people for 5 years when there's other other welfare reform coming from the President Clinton. We haven't seen it. We have not been in touch with our congressmen to see what's all in that package. And I just think this is just too early for us. You said at the beginning when you first introduced it that it was just a proposal, and so here we are having a bill in front of us. I just think that it's not going to do us any good right now. I think it's just too early.
Thank you, Representative Nicolette.
Madam Chairman, I have a motion on the floor.
Object. Laura Lee, would you please call the roll?
Representative Con Bundy.
Yes.
Representative Gary Davis.
Yes.
Representative Al Beasley.
Yes.
Representative Peacott is not present.
Yes, he is.
I'm sorry, you're bad. Representative Peacott.
Physically, not mentally.
Representative Harley Olberg.
Yes.
Representative Betty Davis is excused. Representative Irene Nicolai.
No.
Representative Tom Bryce.
No.
Representative Cynthia.
Yes. This bill passes out of committee. Thank you. That will be the end of business for the day. Thank you. We will be hearing and taking up.
Many conditions.
May I call this meeting back to order again? We will be taking up in order of. House Bill 337, Drug-Free Recreation Youth Centers, and House Joint Resolution 52, Increase in Federal Medicaid Fundings at the next meeting, and any unfinished bills held over, and we will try and call your office. I do believe your office was called today, Representative Bryce.
No, it was our office.